with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between, because each and every week these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or perhaps you want me to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's all one word right there. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you're in high voice tonight and you would like to be part of the show, I invite you to call in. That toll-free line is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And just in case you may not be able to spend the entire hour with me this evening, these broadcasts are now podcasted, in case you would like to go back and listen again. Or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And so just go back into the website and just look for the archive section and just find the broadcast that you would like to listen to again, and you can pull it right up. And also, these broadcasts are now available for download on Audible, iTunes, and Amazon Music. So I would also want to mention that if you would like to subscribe to these broadcasts, you may also do that by visiting the website and click on the subscription link. Well, when we consider what reclaiming authenticity is all about, and I have to say I'm asked about this, you know, pretty much every week, we have to place reclaiming authenticity into a larger context, because it doesn't really boil down to, you know, where we were born or into what family we were placed. But the main importance is that we live in a world that's just filled with relationships. We can't get out of it. You know, we're born into relationships. We have to interact in relationships. We work in relationships. Everything we do is in relation to one another. And quite often, we are, you know, the social beings who often spend the majority of our lives at, you know, just simply spend a lot of energy, let's say, trying to make sense of our world by trying to find our place in the world. You know, where do I fit? Who fits with me? To whom do I belong? And so on and so forth, you know, like-minded people or like spiritual beliefs or whatever it is. And so let me say that again, that we are social beings, and, you know, we are born into these relationships, and, you know, we often spend our times just trying to make sense of our world in and through these relationships. And I cannot tell you just how many people I talk to on sometimes a daily basis or a weekly basis who do not know who they are, or let alone believe that the very best of who they are is still waiting to emerge. And as I explain this to, let's say, new clients that I sit with, you know, I say that, you know, my whole philosophy of how and why I work with clients the way that I do truly comes from two deep-seated beliefs that I carry within myself. It just kind of governs how I am with people. And the first is that I truly believe that people have the answers to their problems within themselves. because everybody has an idea of how they would like to live their lives. You know, what, and think about this, what makes you happy? What makes you peaceful and content? And what fills you with joy? What fills you with sorrow? And so forth. And yet, at the time we go through certain experiences in our lives that may leave us bewildered, confused, or just totally lost. Other times we could be simply minding our own business and we end up being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and then something traumatic happens to us. And then still, there may be experiences that we go through that, even though we believe we've dealt with, later on, we only to discover that the deeper lessons have yet to be learned by us, and they keep popping up from our past. So at any rate, these negative experiences often create this barrier or an obstacle that we find it just really impossible to get past, you know, try as we may. And part of our frustration and disappointment in life is that we often keep making the same mistakes over and over again and again until we start to look inward and we begin to ask tough questions of ourselves, such as, you know, what am I hanging on to? Or what is that belief that is no longer serving me that I just simply cannot let go of? Or what am I unwilling to look at in my life? What am I unwilling to forgive? Or what keeps me from being truly grateful in and for my life? And the big one, who do I need to make peace with? And maybe we need to make peace with ourselves first. Well, the second deep-seated belief I carry within myself is that I truly believe that all of us come into this world already equipped with everything that we need for in this life. You know, our gifts, our strengths, our talents, our graces, our character, personality, and the potential to build strong resiliency. Or in other words, the very best of ourselves, the very best of who we are. And yet, we may not believe we are these things because either we simply cannot see those things in ourselves, or maybe we've never looked deep enough within, or maybe we have never been given the opportunities to allow the very best parts of ourselves to emerge. You know, those gifts, as I talked about, the skills, our uniqueness that we come into the world with. This is a Latin word, haecetas, or a thisness, that the Scottish Franciscan John Duns Scotus coined the phrase, this thisness. There's a uniqueness to you that is unlike anybody else. Kind of like a thumbprint, as I explain it to kids. It's like, you know, hey, we all have a thumbprint. We're all human, but no two thumbprints are alike. And therefore, you know, everybody has their own uniqueness about them. Because two people could, or three people could be, you know, building a house or making a quilt or making breakfast or something like that. But no two people, no three people, no four people, or whoever, are going to make it the same way, because everybody has their uniqueness. And yet, as we're trying to find our place in the world, we often forget that we are unique, and we stop looking for those, you know, the very best of ourselves in ourselves. Or, you know, maybe we've stopped looking, or we've given up looking because, you know, somebody told us as we were growing up that we just simply don't live up to their expectation of us, that we always fall short in some way, that we're always a disappointment, or whatever that message is. Or maybe we, you know, just hid that uniqueness from other people in order to survive abuse. Or, you know, we didn't want to let our uniqueness, you know, really shine for fear of being ridiculed or shamed in some way. And, you know, perhaps maybe those aspects of ourselves have been taken away from us and we didn't have the strength to fight back, to fight that, to stand our ground, so to speak, and not surrender our power as it is. So either way, you know, when we become aware that we can discover and live out the very best of who we are, then we are empowered to reclaim our voice, our uniqueness, our thisness. And this is really what reclaiming authenticity is all about: coming to terms with who we truly are by focusing on the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, with others, and God or the divine. And knowing who we are is a state of becoming, or being made aware of who we are and have always been, and who and what we are and have been always connected to. Well, one of my favorite authors, Carl Rogers, I was going through school, I was trained not by him, but I was certainly influenced by his work. And so back in his day, psychiatrist, and he was the founder of person-centered therapy. And he once wrote that when another person is hurting, or when another person is confused or troubled, or when another person is anxious or alienated, or they feel terrified, or when he or she is doubtful of their self-worth, or as uncertain to their identity, then understanding on behalf of another is called for. In fact, the gentle and sensitive companionship of an empathic stance provides illumination and healing. In other words, it's that presence. You know, who are we, not just with ourselves, but who are we and how are we with another person? And in such situations, he says, you know, deep understanding is, as he believes, the most precious gift we can give to one another. So I'll be taking your calls in a little while, really after the break, because I really would like to hear from you on today's subject, the potential of being extraordinary. The potential of being extraordinary. And I don't know if you've ever considered the fact that you are extraordinary, because that is simply who you are to begin with. You know, it's not based on what you can and can't do, but it's really your presence. Again, who are you at your core level? Well, speaking of the core, how is your heart today? I hope your heart is well. I hope you are well. I hope that even if you are struggling a little bit today, maybe in this hour you'll be able to find some rest and comfort and the peace that you need. Well, as I got up this morning, and I first thing I usually do is look at the calendar, and when I saw the calendar, and it's like, oh my gosh, here we are, August 16th already, right smack dab in the middle of August. Like, maybe you're like me, where did the summer go? You know, it's been an interesting summer, you know, from what I remember. You know, it's just, you know, here we are in the middle of August, and before you know it, you're going to be singing Christmas carols. But saw an interesting news segment today on the Today Show, and they were talking about how some stores were already putting out Christmas decorations. And if you're like me, you just kind of shake your head and like, that's a little ridiculous, because it's not even Labor Day. You know, usually they would put that stuff out before October, and now it's getting out before Labor Day. And of course, there were pros and cons of people they got to interview as to why they thought this was a good thing or why they thought it wasn't a good thing, and so on and so forth. But in case you're out and about, don't be surprised if you see Christmas decorations and sales and all kinds of paraphernalia out there already before Labor Day. So all I can say is, you know, if you're feeling a little out of sorts, and if you haven't already fastened your spiritual seatbelt, you better do so today. Now, it doesn't mean that we have no choice but to be caught up in our feeling of being out of control, but just the opposite. We can be a very intentional, purposeful, calming presence every day. And when you think about it, you know, when we are able to remain as, let's say, a life-giving presence for others, we are engaged in the work of the transmutation or alchemy. And perhaps we learn this early on in life and we just never put two and two together, so to speak. For example, has anybody out there in internet radio land ever had a chemistry set as a kid or teenager? You know, maybe nothing to brag about, but maybe this little kit came with a microscope and some glass slides, a glass beaker, a small flask, some tongs, and an eyedropper. And with a little help from the instruction manual, we had fun mixing colors to see what we would get. Or perhaps with our chemistry set, we would do simple experiments such as taking a few drops of vinegar and putting it to baking soda and just watch the fizz and foam as the hydrogen ions in the vinegar react with the sodium and bicarbonate ions. Or also, you know, maybe we had fun mixing food coloring together to get a whole new color, such as mixing red and blue to get purple, or mixing white and black to get gray, or whatever it might be. But we've learned these lessons fairly early on in life. And, you know, it's, you know, certainly it's a knowledge that stays with us, you know, that there is a change that occurs when two or more elements come together. Well, let's, you know, modern day chemistry has enjoyed a long history of development that actually stretches back to ancient Egypt. You know, back then they called it alchemy, you know, the process of taking something ordinary and turning it into something extraordinary, sometimes in ways in which cannot be explained. Now, alchemy's name is taken from the ancient art of transformation, in that the alchemist attempted to transform, let's say, a lower base metal, such as lead or copper or nickel and zinc, and turning it into gold, because gold was and is the standard and was seen as the perfect metal, and all others were considered less perfect. And that was an idea that was popular among Western alchemists. It was a very popular idea indeed that these lower metals could be transmuted into gold by means of a substance known as the Philosopher's Stone. Now, the Philosopher's Stone is a legendary substance. You know, it's considered, you know, capable of turning inexpensive metals into gold. And it was sometimes believed, you know, that it was the elixir of life. That it was useful, if you had this, it was useful for rejuvenation or possibly for achieving immortality. And if you've ever seen the movie Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, it's one and the same thing. I don't know why they changed the name, but the Sorcerer's Stone and the Philosopher's Stone are the same thing in the Harry Potter movie. But you know, the ancient Egyptians were not the only ones who practiced the art of alchemy. You had the ancient Greece, you had China, you had India. You know, they also had their own distinct forms of alchemy. But by the 8th century AD, the Arabians are believed or were believed to have brought alchemy to Spain and then on to the rest of Europe. And so by the 16th century, the alchemists in Europe had separated into two groups, where the first group focused on the discovery of new compounds and their reactions, and which led to what is now known as the science of chemistry. However, the second group continued to look at more of the spiritual, metaphysical side of alchemy, you know, continuing this search for immortality or this elixir of life. And, you know, but all in all, spiritual alchemy is the act of an inner transformation. It is healing and freeing the inner parts of ourselves that need to be changed. You know, as I said earlier, that, you know, a lot of times we struggle with trying to get buy some things in our lives, and we keep making the same mistakes over and over again. And we, am I ever going to get through this? Am I ever going to learn these lessons and so forth? And that's what spiritual alchemy, in a sense, is talking about. You know, the transformation that needs to occur. What has to change? What has to change in our lives and so forth? And by transforming, you know, these parts of ourselves, it certainly leads us to this inner liberation, a freedom, if you will, from our fears or beliefs that no longer serve us, or a soul loss to a certain degree, or other self-destructive disorders. And so all in all, in a sense, it is freeing a spiritual self, which is trapped within you by the unrefined parts of yourself. You know, like I said, the fears, you know, the beliefs that no longer serve us, self-loathing and all that. And spiritual alchemy is vastly more multifaceted. So for me, perhaps the most fascinating aspect of spiritual alchemy is its objective: to free us from our core wounds, our core beliefs, our soul loss, and other self-destructive structures in our lives, in order for us to live more freely and unobstructed. And so, whether or not we realize it, alchemy and transformation, you know, they are occurring all around us every day. For example, a little too early right now, but come fall, you know, when the leaves change their colors, this too is alchemy. The change in the amount of sunlight affects the photosynthesis in leaves by turning them from green to yellow or red or even blue or purple. And eventually, as the alchemy continues, the leaves will turn brown and die, disintegrate, and return to nourish the soil, all to repeat the process over and over again with every spring, summer, fall, and winter. And all the elements of fire, wind, water, and earth all have a hand in alchemy in our lives. Even within our own digestive system, you know, whenever we eat something or drink something, our gastric juices break down food so that it then can be absorbed as nutrients or fuel or energy for us to go about our everyday lives. And whatever is not absorbed, our bodies eliminate eventually. But let's stay with the fire element as we consider how alchemy ties into our psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual transformation, okay? Now, fire is also a major contributor in alchemy, and it burns wood and it changes its chemical composition from a solid to a gas, which eventually mixes with dust and such, only to return to us eventually in the form of clouds and rain that also nourish the soil. But, you know, many people ask me, you know, well, exactly how do we transmute or change energy? Well, I think first of all, we have to get straight within ourselves that we cannot destroy energy. We can only change it. You know, it's just simply, it's the law of physics. It's just, it is what it is. We can never destroy energy, but we can transform it. And just as we learn how to make purple from mixing red and blue, you know, we simply cannot destroy the color red or destroy the color blue. But when we mix the two together, the color changes or transforms to purple. So we need to replace or transform, you know, that psychological, emotional, and spiritual energy into life-giving energy. So, for instance, you know, throughout our days, we can easily pick up negative emotional energy in the form of strong feelings of hate or jealousy or envy or ego or whatever it is. But what do we do with it? You know, some things kind of glom onto us and we don't know it, and it just starts to zap our energy. But what do we do when these strong feelings come up? You know, just a lot of negativity, a lot of hateful things. Well, there's a meditative exercise that I do that whenever I want to change the negative energy of a thought or a feeling from a daily experience. So I imagine, you know, I sit quietly and I imagine sitting with a fire, small fire, you know, in front of me or beside me. And each day, you know, I certainly set my intention to send these negative, destructive emotions into the fire so that it will be transmuted out into the universe. But I'm not finished at that point. Because remember, if you've been listening to me for a while, you've heard me say on more than one occasion that we live in an echo, so that whatever we send out eventually returns to us in the same energy unless it has been transformed. Okay, and that's key right there. Whatever we send out is going to come back to us in the same energy unless it has been transformed. Okay, and this is the general principle of karma, or we reap what we sow, or what goes around comes around. You know, we have many ways of saying the same thing, that anything that comes from us returns to us. So we have to transform negative energy that we experience in the form of, let's say, psychological, emotional, physical, and even spiritual woundedness. And we know that we can hold stress and tension, even trauma in the body and the mind and the emotions and the spirit, even right down to the cellular level. And cell memory holds all of our experiences, so that when something reminds us of an experience that was beautiful or pleasant or horrific or traumatic, we can be pulled back into those experiences at any given moment. So to transform the negative energy we may be experiencing, we must first be aware of what we may be holding on to or what is holding on to us. So again, in my daily meditation, I take time to do a quick scan of my mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual self. And then I intentionally send those things that drained me or disrupted my peace into this fire to be transformed, imagining that as the fire transforms the wood and it changes, goes up into the atmosphere, out into the universe, and mixes with the dust and so forth, I also realize that this is just the beginning. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on this matter, so invite you to call in and let's talk about this potential of being extraordinary. So if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And before I get into the second half of the show tonight, I wanted to take some time and just express my gratitude for you, the listeners, you know, out there who have expressed your kind words of appreciation and thoughts along the way. And thank you for tuning in every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. for these Reclaiming Authenticity broadcasts. Well, earlier in the show, we were talking about that we must learn that we cannot destroy energy. We can only change it, you know, or transmute it. That's coming right out of the law of physics. That's, in fact, that's the very first lesson of physics we learn in school. And we need to replace or transform that psychological, emotional, spiritual energy into life-giving energy, something that's going to benefit us, okay? So, for instance, I think I gave the example that we can easily pick up negative emotional energy in the form of, let's say, strong feelings of hate or jealousy, or maybe at times we are envious or our ego kicks up or something. And then we're left with, okay, what do I do with it? Well, there is a meditative exercise that I want to share with you, what I do to change the negative energy of a thought or a feeling from an experience that I've picked up on. And I try to do this every day or even in the moment. And that's, you know, sending it into the fire. And at the break, or I should say before the break, I just had us just imagine that we were sitting with a fire that's either in front of us or beside us, like say off to the right. And each day, I invite you to set your intention to send any kind of negative, destructive emotion or any negative thought into the fire so that it will be transmuted out into the universe, you know, so that we are no longer carrying it, so that it's no longer bouncing around inside of us. But as I said right before the break, not finished at this point. This is only one half of this meditation. And all the while, when we are sending things into the fire to be transmuted and eventually out into the universe, we also need to set our intention to be able to receive what has been transmuted into now life-giving energy. Okay? So let me give you an example here. Let's say that we are aware that we are filled with stress because we've been unintentionally picking up on the negative energy of others, okay, or the negativity of stress from deadlines or other situations or hateful feelings or whatever it might be, just something very negative and just very hurtful to us. Well, once we become aware of this, intentionally send that stress or that anxiety or whatever it is into the fire to be transmuted, as well as ask that once it has been transmuted, it returns to us in the form of, let's say, peace, or staying neutral in our emotions, or embrace love and patience for others who have yet to embrace their peace. And we can do this in any given moment. I've even done this, you know, well, when I used to go into an office, you know, on my way to work or my way home from work, that whatever I have picked up along, you know, the throughout the day, you know, before I get home, I just want to send it into the fire so that I'm not bringing it home with me. And so I send it out to be transmuted. And once it's transmuted, may it be returned to me as just peace in my heart, peace in my mind, just a calmness, a gentleness, and helping to be more loving with my loved ones. You know, something as simple as that, but it's the habit and it is the intentionality of transmuting negative energy into something more positive and life-giving. And, you know, there is a Franciscan teaching out there in that for every situation, look for the peace. Wherever you find yourself, just look for the peace in a group or, you know, wherever you are. Just, you know, where's the peace? And if you cannot find peace, then what do you need to do so that you become the peace in that situation? So in every situation, look for the peace. And if you cannot find peace, then you yourself become the peace. Or if you cannot find, let's say, compassion, then you become the compassion for others. And these are grace-filled moments. These are teachable moments. These are life-changing moments. Because as we minister to others in a physical sense, we also minister to others in a spiritual sense. Even if they have no idea what's taking place, they will remember how somebody was with them. And you know, I have to say that we often make it harder or more complicated than what it needs to be. You know, in a sense, God says to us, you know, you do what you can do. I'll take care of the rest. Because if we ever want to see extraordinary grace in action, pay attention to the ordinariness of life. And yes, you have the potential to be extraordinary. In fact, you already are extraordinary. Perhaps you've never had an opportunity to be able to see it in yourself. But seeing the extraordinariness of God in the ordinary, the potential of being extraordinary, tangible holiness, as it were, as we pay attention as to how and when and where and in whom God shows up in our lives. You know, where, you know, we have discovered God in, let's say, the most unlikely places and in and through the most unlikely people. Now think about this for, you know, a minute. You know, where have you been part of those ordinary blessings and been part of God's extraordinariness? Where have you been part of those ordinary blessings and been part of God's extraordinariness? Well, in his book, Making All Things New, Henry Nouwen, he was a priest, professor, and an author, he wrote that we can take a lot of physical and even mental pain when we know that it truly makes us part of the life we live together in the world. It's kind of a shared burden, a shared humanity. It's a shared burden. It's a shared healing. It's something we have in common. But also, we share this extraordinariness. We walk, or let me back up here a second and just say that we might think we walk in ordinariness in life, the ordinary, the humdrum, the day-to-day. But when have you been part of the extraordinariness? When have you seen something extraordinary in you? Well, again, if you've been listening to me for some time, you know, you know, I've said this many times, that it certainly doesn't take a lot of effort on our part to be able to see and hear the pain of others. You know, and we don't have to, you know, look no further than sometimes than within our own families or within our own communities to be reminded that pain and misery and suffering runs so, so deep. And it's true, pain and loss and grief and misery and suffering is something we all have in common, regardless of race and creed and color or language barriers or social distancing, what have you. But we also have in common, as humanity, our strength, our love, our perseverance, our grace, and who we are, our presence. We hold both. We hold both these things in its shared humanity. Kind of like, you know, just like a cup can hold something hot like coffee or something cold like maybe iced tea, that when it's shared with another person at just the right time, it could just be the difference that a person needs to be reminded that they are not alone in this world. Long time ago, I came across a story about a youth group who held various fundraisers in their community to raise money to visit another church community in Central America. And I think it took them almost a year to raise all the money, you know, airfare and supplies and everything that they were taking. And I think there was 10 of them in the group, and of course their leader, their youth pastor. And about a month before they left, the leader could not get in touch with the church down there in Central America. And it seemed like all forms of communication had stopped. There was just nothing going in, nothing going out. Well, instead of postponing the trip, the leader decided to take this little group of teenagers with him to this village. And after they landed and, you know, got situated and they, you know, had a bus or several, you know, jeeps that were taken out by, you know, those who took them to this village. When they arrived, they couldn't believe their eyes. You know, the whole town was devastated by an earthquake that had occurred about a month ago. And ironically, the only building left standing somewhat was the church in the center part of this little village. And it was a Sunday morning, and the youth group heard singing coming from inside this church. And so nobody else was around, so the group decided to walk over to the church. They opened the doors, they walked inside, and almost immediately the singing stopped. And everyone in the church looked around in amazement at this little group of teenagers. And the pastor, who was leading worship that Sunday morning, walked down from the front, and he asked the group, "Que pasa?" Which roughly translates, "What in the world are you kids doing in a place like this?" Well, the youth pastor and the group explained why they were there and how they raised money and brought some basic medical supplies with them. And the pastor of this little village, you know, was listening to this story, and he was in tears at that point. And he explained what had happened to the village since the earthquake and how they've been asking God to send someone to help them. And when the pastor was finished, one teen in the group turned to another and with a big smile said, "Well, what do you know? I never thought we'd be an answer to prayer." That's right. You never know where and through whom the extraordinariness of God is going to show up in the ordinary. Think about it. How many times have you considered yourself an answer to someone's prayer by the simple acts of just love and compassion, understanding, being patient? Because, you know, if giving a simple cup of tea to another person can make all of heaven applaud, just imagine if we are even more intentional to live the extraordinariness that God intends us to be. You see, that's the kind of alchemy that is so needed in today's world, especially in the up-and-coming generations, those who have yet to be born. And our greatest lessons that we can teach our youth is for them to see us behaving graciously and compassionately and lovingly towards each other. Because they're going to have questions. How do we live out our faith? How do we live out our mental health? How do we live out our spirituality? How do we live out extraordinariness in an ordinary world? And so on and so forth. And, you know, more importantly, we who are the older generations need to make sure the younger generations know that we see, hear, and embrace their potential for extraordinariness, for kindness and strength, resiliency and hope. They need to know that we see them as good husbands and wives. They need to know that we see them as good fathers and mothers. We need to make sure they know how valuable and hopeful they are. When was the last time you communicated this to a young person? When was the last time you saw their potential for extraordinariness? When was the last time you saw your own potential? This is alchemy, a changing of energy into something more life-giving that we find ourselves in. And I often, you know, when I taught, I often would tell my students, never underestimate the power of their presence in any given situation. And this is what it means for us to be for this world that is generating anger and rage and contempt and strife and violence, uncertainty and confusion. Healing is a deeply human and divine process. And because it's a deep process, self-care is of most importance. Because whenever I'm involved in clearing negative energy, either from lands or helping others process, you know, their emotions, or even getting rid of stuff that may have like glommed on to me throughout the day, I have to take it easy with myself. Because depending on the intensity of the energy, I usually have to sleep for a while in order for myself to continue processing out the shift in energy. And I, you know, future broadcasts, I'll be sharing more about this. And in addition, if you're like me that is involved in clearing a lot of negative energy, in addition to taking it easy for a while, you know, you also need to drink plenty of water, that liquid light, to replenish the energy that has been released. Rest when you are tired. Work when you have the energy. And always continue to integrate your experiences, because these form your narrative, your story, for others to hear. Honor yourself. Honor the ones in who you pray for. We are alchemists in a sense that when you change the energy of any room or situation, sending it into the fire, asking that it be transmuted, and that let it return to you as something more life-giving. Well, again, you've heard me say this before if you've been following this particular Reclaiming Authenticity, but one of my all-time favorite books is The Alchemist. I read this book every summer. Guaranteed, every summer. And if you've ever read The Alchemist, you realize that Santiago, the little shepherd boy, you know, his journey literally brings him back to the place where he left. But he himself has been on an inward journey because he himself has been transformed along the way. Kind of like, you know, similar to what T.S. Eliot said once, that let us not cease from exploration, and for all our exploring will be for us to arrive at a place where we started, but we will know it for the very first time. And the prominent theme that runs through the book, The Alchemist, is that through the character Santiago, we realize that when we really want something to happen, we discover the whole universe will conspire so that our wish comes true. And it is this theme that ties us in today's topic, because this is something I truly believe in, that when we pay attention to what has been placed in our hearts, and that we listen to the cry of our own soul, and we commit to it, the entire universe will make it happen, if we remain open and teachable to every situation in our lives. Because when we do this, we're also going to discover that we may have been destined to embrace the cry of our soul all along. Everyone has the potential for that extraordinariness, because we are all beautiful souls made in the image of God, full of inherent value, dignity, and worth. And yet, how many times do we struggle to accept this truth because our attention is often diverted to focus solely on outward appearances or behaviors or achievements or accomplishments? In other words, we all live with some degree of ignorance of our soul consciousness. And we may get glimpses of it, but have we ever fully attained, you know, the full extent? You know, because the physical, emotional, psychological issues cloud our vision of who we truly are. And yes, diseases and illnesses do afflict us in the body. We do feel physical and emotional pain. And at times our lungs may struggle to take a breath, or hunger and diseases may cause our stomach, intestines, and bones and muscles and blood to scream in agony. And these experiences just might make us question whether or not we are the soul whom God has created. And yet this illusion of not being able to see who we truly are lies not in the suffering and pain of the agony we experience, but rather it's in our perception that there is nothing more to us than an emotional, intellectual, or physical body. And it indeed, you know, physical and emotional pain and suffering can temporarily drown out the cry of the soul, but our soul is never silenced. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me this evening. And if you have any further questions or comments, please shoot me an email. But until then, have a good 2 weeks. I'll be back here right on the 30th of August with another broadcast. So I look forward to spending that time with you. So in the meantime, everybody take care and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.